Church. Man, can you guys give it up for this team? This was amazing, week in and week out. The worship is exceptional. I know that they get here early to lead us, and so guys, thank you. Thank you so much. Well, my name's Austin. I'm on the team here at the church. I have some good news for you. Trevor's getting a rest and a break from teaching this week and just kind of able to enjoy the service to some degree. I have some not so good news for you. You're stuck with me. but sincerely, gosh, in the short time that I've been at this church, Trevor DeBenning and his family have had a significant impact on me. Whether it's Trevor as a leader, Trevor as a pastor, Trevor in the way that I see his family kind of interact around the dinner table from time to time, and planting and launching and pastoring a church comes at tremendous, tremendous sacrifice. And so I just want to take a moment, and if Trevor's made even a fraction of the impact on your life that he's made on mine, you know that impact it's significant. And so can we just show some honor to Trevor and his family? Man, you guys, we're so, so thankful for you guys. But whether this is your first time here, or you've been with us for 30 minutes here in person, or 30 minutes with us online, or you've been here for 30 years worshiping in person, or more recently worshiping online with us, we are simply a church that is relentlessly committed to a vision of a Los Angeles where every single person has experienced the life-changing power of the gospel. Now, as an ENFP, I love the social aspect of church. I love seeing people. I love greeting people out front. But church is so much more than that. It is about life change. It is about the good news of Jesus being professed week in and week out. And as a result, we've got a mission to make sure every person knows Jesus better, and that in knowing Jesus, they actually begin to grow in their faith, grow in their trust, their dependence, their reliance upon Jesus. And we think that when we do that, it changes us. It forms us into the kinds of people that serve better in the home, serve better in the workplace, serve better our local partners. This church has even sent people to serve people across the world. We think that when we know Jesus and we grow in faith, we get equipped to go and serve. So as we lean into the text this morning, we're about 2 weeks into Lent. Lent is this 40-day period carved out before Holy Week, Good Friday, and Easter that just kind of creates some space for the church to create more room for God. Oftentimes people will cut out sugar or caffeine. Some people, believe it or not, cut out entire meals. I know, it's wild. But that's Lent. And so we're in this kind of, this march to Holy Week, this march to the cross. And so it's only fitting that we are in the Gospel of John as we march with Jesus and his disciples to the cross. I love what John says about his gospel. He says he's not writing this thing for fun. He's not writing because he has extra time on his hands. John writes this gospel that we might believe in Jesus, the Messiah, the Son of God, and that we might have life in his name. And so we've been in this series on the gospel of John, and even more particularly, we've been in a little bit of a mini-series about Lazarus. It's about a four-week mini-series. 2 weeks ago, we talked about Jesus getting word from messengers, from Mary and Martha, that the one whom he loved was sick. And Jesus gives his disciples comforting words and the messengers confusing words that he's going to stick around just a little bit longer. The messengers are confused because they're expecting Jesus to leave immediately. The disciples are comforted because they know how dangerous it is to go back towards Bethany, to go back towards Jerusalem. And yet, Jesus, 2 days later, begins the march to Lazarus. And so last week we talked about Jesus and his interaction with Martha. Martha is a get me the manager kind of gal, as Trevor talked about last week. And so she goes out to meet Jesus before he even makes it to Bethany. And Martha has this stunning claim about Jesus. That she says, Jesus, I believe you are the Messiah, the Son of God, the one that has been sent into the world. And that's where we pick up our story this morning. We'll look at Mary's interaction with Martha as Martha relays that message to Mary. We'll look at the interaction between Jesus and Mary, and ultimately what the crowd says about Jesus in the midst of all of this. So if you have your Bibles, we'll be in John chapter 11. You can turn to John chapter 11, but I want to start with this. I had an amazing day yesterday. I was a part of Serve Day, a part of a team that was serving on site. We had the chance to go serve Harvest Home. We did some deep cleaning. We did some work in the backyard. Especially, we got to mess with a water hose. Spraying down furniture, it reminded me of just being a kid again, out in the yard with a water hose. And afterwards, it was kind of a warm summer day like today is. And so we went to Abbot Kinney, which is not Abbot Kinney Road, but just Abbot Kinney, to get a little refreshment. Went for some boba, some tea, but more importantly, salt and straw. A little ice cream joint over there, and I didn't partake in the ice cream. I did the tea instead. Maybe that was a mistake. Maybe it was a good call for Lent. I don't know. But some folks went to Salt and Straw, and they brought out some ice cream, and I looked at the person sitting next to me. I said, man, it has been so long since I've had ice cream. It's just been a minute, and I was kind of thinking back to some childhood memories of ice cream. And more specifically, I mean, when you're a kid, ice cream is great. But what's even better is an ice cream truck, right? So like, we might be inside playing video games. We might be in the backyard playing ball. But as soon as we heard that familiar tune of the ice cream truck rolling down the street, we put down the baseball, we put down the video game controller, and we sprinted towards that ice cream truck. Man, those were simpler times. And I remembered a few other moments in which I was quick to rush to something. Now, I remember being in school, and you just could not wait for class to be done. The bus was going to take you home. You're going to play sports, spend time with your friends. And so you're just watching that clock on the wall. And as soon as it hit the right time and that bell rang, you didn't wait 2 seconds. You just grabbed your stuff and ran out the door to the bus, much to the dismay of teachers all over the country. There were moments when I was a kid in which I was quick. We might win a state football championship game. And before the trophy presentation even happened, we would rush the field. You know, when you get excited about something, you're quick to rush to it. When we get to John chapter 11, we see Mary being quick to rush to Jesus. In fact, John is going to use this word twice as he talks about this interaction. And so in John chapter 11, beginning in verse 28, it says, after she had said this, referring to Martha making this stunning declaration about Jesus that he's the Messiah. It says she went back and she called her sister Mary aside. That word for called her aside is really that word called her privately to herself. In other words, Martha has gone outside the city to meet with Jesus, and Mary has stayed in the house to mourn Lazarus. And Mary is surrounded by a community of folks that are mourning with her. Now, commentators might be a little bit on the fence. Why did Mary stay back? Was she disappointed, angry, frustrated, and so she wanted Jesus to come to her? Was she abiding by some social norms and just saying, I know Jesus is on his way, but I'm going to do what the custom is, which is to stay here and to mourn with the community? Whatever the reason is, when Martha comes to Mary, she has to pull Mary aside quietly and privately from the folks that are in the room. And so you can imagine Martha and maybe a quiet voice in the corner saying this to Mary. She says, the teacher is here, she said, and he's asking for you. It's an interesting thing that when Martha makes this statement, she puts emphasis on the teacher. We shouldn't be shocked in the first century in this kind of a community for rabbis and leaders and teachers to be stopping by. But when Martha says the teacher, it's like the messenger's telling Jesus, the one you love is sick. For some reason, they're just not using a lot of names in this passage. I don't know what's going on, but Martha comes back to Mary and says, the teacher is here. And he's not asking for everybody to come and see him. He's asking for you specifically. Mary is in grief. Mary is mourning. Mary is in pain. And Jesus calls for her by name specifically. Isn't it good news that when we are in pain, when we are in grief, when we are in mourning, Jesus does not evade us. He does not hide from us. He does not try and avoid us, but he calls us by name to come to him. Verse 29, when Mary heard this, it says she got up quickly and went to him. Why? Because it says in verse 30, Jesus had not yet entered the village. There's something about him and his disciples. They kind of stopped a little bit outside the village, had this interact with Martha, sent Martha in, and then Jesus and his posse are just kind of hanging outside of Bethany. Some commentators would say because that might be where the work of Jesus lies, that Lazarus is buried somewhere out there, and so he's waiting in the space where his work may be. So verse 30, Jesus has not yet entered the village, but was still at the place where Martha had met him. And then John is going to drop that word quickly again. Verse 31, when the Jews had been with Mary in the house comforting her, when they noticed how quickly Mary had gotten up and went out, they followed her. Not knowing Jesus was there because Martha had said this privately, they followed her supposing she was going to the tomb to mourn there. Man, I love this idea that whether we are in a season of being frustrated with Jesus, maybe being in a season of being disappointed by God, maybe none of those things are happening, but we're kind of consumed with the customs of the day, waking up, going to work, sports games, social interactions, etc. There are things that we can do in our lives or attitudes we can hold that keep us from the presence of Jesus. But in this moment, Mary is quick to go position herself in the presence of Jesus. I love that idea. You know, growing up, I was fortunate enough to be around some folks like my parents or mentors and pastors, and I would oftentimes catch them being quick to go to Jesus. You know, every once in a while, I'd be up before my dad, and I'd go down to the kitchen, and I'd be sitting at the kitchen table, and it'd be early, you know, 7 a.m., maybe earlier, and I'd see my dad shuffle to the kitchen table with his Bible in hand. First thing he was doing in the morning before texting, before email, and there wasn't social media then, the first thing he was doing was, I'm going to be quick to the presence of God. I used to work at the Sonic Drive-In, and I was a car hop, imagine that. I'd stay the night at my friend's places, and we'd stay up late, and the next morning I'd be opening the store. So I'd have to get up at, you know, 6 a.m. to be there by 6:30 to open it, and one of my best friends, his dad was a pastor, and so I'd run to the living room, I'd kind of grab my Sonic uniform to go, and I'd kind of catch him listening to worship music and reading his Bible first thing in the morning. You see, in the life of discipleship, we have this opportunity to cultivate a life in which we are quick to the presence of God. And when I think about my life, that's the kind of disciple I want to be. I want to be a disciple that in my frustration, I'm quick to pray. I want to be the kind of disciple that when I'm in a season of disappointment, I'm quick to worship. I want to be the kind of disciple that when somebody tells me they're going through it, I want to say, hey, can we just pause? And can we just pray right now? That's the kind of disciple I want to be, quick to pray, quick to worship, quick to serve. And the good news is no matter how far from God you might feel, no matter how disappointed with him you might be, no matter how much you've just kind of crowded him out of your life because the first thing you do in the morning is check your email, or the last thing you do before bed is check your social media, no matter what the reason, we can be the kinds of people that decide, you know what, in the morning, I'm going to be quick to the presence of God. You know, at lunchtime during my lunch break, I'm going to be quick to pray. You know, in the evening before I go to bed, the last thing I'm going to do is be quick to read a proverb. I want to be that kind of disciple. Quick to the presence of God. That's the first thing. The second thing is this, and we learn this about Jesus in this kind of mini-series passage about Lazarus, that Jesus is not afraid to speak the truth to us. If you go back and listen to the message last week, which was incredible, we learn about Jesus speaking truth to Martha. And so you would expect that in this verse, in this passage, he's going to do the same with Mary. In fact, we'll continue in verse 32. It says, when Mary reached the place where Jesus was and saw him, she kind of crumbles at his feet. Just falls down weeping and mourning, saying, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. It's the exact same statement Martha makes. It's like they rehearsed this. I don't know what's going on. It says, if you would have been here, my brother would not have died. And when Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews would also, along with her, saw her weeping, it says he told them exactly what he had told Martha. He just told them something true. Now, in this story, he doesn't quite do that. Although he told Martha truthful things, when he sees Mary weeping, and when he sees the crowd weeping, it says he was deeply moved in spirit, and he was troubled. Verse 35 will say that Jesus began to weep as well. In other words, there are seasons in our life in which Jesus speaks truth to us. We may be in a season of mourning or of disappointment, and when we are quick to the presence of God, we are going to hear Jesus speak truth over our lives. And sometimes when we are disappointed or angry or frustrated with God and we're quick to his presence, what we find is this sense that Jesus is weeping alongside of us. That Jesus is, he's just kind of present with us in it. Maybe it's sitting at your kitchen table in the morning reading and you get the sense, I don't feel like I'm hearing from God, but I feel his presence. I don't feel like God's speaking to me right now, but I feel like he's in this room with me. And as I mourn, he's mourning with me. And in this weeping attitude, I want to draw attention to verse 33. It says that Jesus was deeply moved in spirit, and he was troubled. Now, this phrase for being deeply moved, it's oftentimes used to speak of horses snorting. You can kind of imagine, what's that horse's name? Ed, right? You kind of hear, it's this kind of this verbal, it's this grunt. When it's used of humans, it's used to talk about somebody being kind of angry. It's this hoarse grunt, verbal anger. So commentators have asked the question, what's he angry about? Is he frustrated with Mary? Is he frustrated with his disciples? Is he frustrated with the crowd here? And one commentator says this. He says, no, he's not frustrated with any of them. He's frustrated with the death itself. It says this, it is death that is the object of the anger and the wrath of Jesus. And not only at death, but at the one behind death, the one who has the power of death, the one that Jesus has come into the world to destroy. Certainly tears of sympathy may fill his eyes, but this is incidental, this commentator says. It says his soul is held by rage as he advances to the tomb of Lazarus. In Calvin's words, as a champion who prepares for conflict. Jesus does not approach the tomb of Lazarus in cold unconcern, but in flaming wrath against the foe that is death. Man, I love that idea. That when something really crummy happens to us, that we experience something horrible in our finances, something horrible in the workplace, something horrible in our family, even death itself, that Jesus is not just unmoved by it. He isn't stoic about it, but when some of the fruit of death begins to come up in our life, it makes Jesus angry and filled with wrath, not at us, but in the way that his creation is corrupting. So in this passage, we don't get a stoic Jesus. We get a Jesus who weeps with his people and is also filled with rage at death, the enemy of God. So we'll continue. This will be our final point as we wrap up this morning. We have to be quick to the presence of God. Jesus will speak truth to us, but he will also be present with us in tears. And here's kind of the final thing, that we can have a lot of confidence when everything around us has completely collapsed. We can have a lot of confidence when everything around us has completely collapsed. Verse 35 is that short verse we all memorized. Jesus wept. And the text moves on in verse 36. I'm not even in the right book anymore. There we go. Verse 36 says, then the Jews said this, man, Jesus is weeping and he's frustrated and he's angry at the death of Lazarus. Look at how much he loved him. Verse 37, but some of them said something different. Could not this one Jesus, could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying? In other words, for the crowd, there's this recognition of how awesome and great and powerful Jesus is. And at the same time, they've put a limit on Jesus. He's healed the sick. He's opened the eyes of the blind. He's helped the lame walk. In other words, as people's lives were collapsing and falling apart, Jesus was kind of able to put the pieces back together and restore, redeem, and heal them. But in this situation, we aren't talking about someone who's blind or lame or sick. We're talking about someone whose life has fully collapsed, that death has come upon them completely. One of the early church fathers says this about how far Jesus has gone in this passage to allow death to reign in this moment. It says this, you see how Jesus gives full scope to death. Jesus grants free reign to the grave. He allows corruption to set in. He prohibits neither putrefaction nor stench from taking their normal course in death. He allows the realm of darkness to seize his friend and take possession of him. He acts like this so that human hope may perish entirely and human despair reach its lowest depths. Have you ever been in that place? Human despair having reached its lowest depth of a situation not being in danger, not falling apart, not corrupting, but a situation that has completely fallen apart. A situation in which that thing has completely collapsed. In this Lazarus story, that's exactly what Jesus allows to happen. By 2 weeks ago, staying 2 days later, by after Lazarus was dead, Jesus moving with his disciples to Bethany, and now everybody here has this limit on Jesus. The power of Jesus is great, but it's not that great. And yet here we are, in which Martha still has confidence in Jesus. Mary, crumbled at his feet, still has confidence in Jesus. There is a sense this morning that when our world has completely collapsed, we can still have confidence in Jesus. I'm not there yet as a disciple. Man, I want to be there though. I was sitting with my dad in his office a few months ago. My dad's just been such a tremendous example to me in faith and leadership, and just a tremendous guy. And we were sitting in his office, and he told me, he was kind of sharing some stories with me. I won't share them now because they're a little private and personal for the family. But it was story after story he was sharing with me about, man, it felt like that situation was completely collapsed. It felt like, man, there may not be coming back from this. Man, I don't know how we're going to get out of this. And he showed me in all these moments how he had just, the first thing he had gone to, and it looked like there was no coming back from this. It was despair, totally falling apart, how he had written it down to pray over it every single day. And showed me God's hand of faithfulness and how in this dead situation, God kind of came and didn't put it back together, but kind of resurrected it all together. So I got this great picture of my dad being in completely collapsed moments, but him still having confidence that God was not through with our family yet. And I'm not there yet. But I want to be there. I want to be the kind of disciple that, man, when things have completely collapsed, I can have confidence that Jesus is not done with me yet. That's a good thing. A lot of this will ring true of communion, and so we'll turn to the table here in just a second, but let's pray this morning as we close and kind of head back into worship. Jesus, we are, we come before this text just kind of in awe all over again. That no matter how frustrated or disappointed or angry or just hurried our life is, that we've moved you out altogether, we're in awe that you allow us still to quickly position ourselves in your presence. And thankful, Lord, that you speak truth. We are thankful that you are not a silent God, but that you speak. But you don't just speak phrases and parables stoically, but you weep with us. You are angered and full of wrath at death itself as it comes and meets us in various places. And Jesus, we want to ask you this morning that as we worship, as we go into community groups, as we turn to the table this morning, we want to ask that you'd begin to shape us in a way that fills us with confidence. Confidence that when our world is collapsing, when it feels like that situation in our family, things are collapsed, things in our finances and our health are beyond recovery, things in our friendships and in our workplace are beyond redemption, that whatever those spaces us, would you just make us the kind of church community that develops confidence that God is not done with us yet, that he can restore, he can redeem, and more importantly and ultimately and limitlessly, he can resurrect. Would you help us, Jesus? It's in your name that we pray. Amen.